Good to be with you all again this morning, even in this unconventional format. It is still a great blessing to be able to be together, to see one another, to speak with one another, and I'm very thankful for the means by which we're able to do this. I'm also very much looking forward to the time when we can be back together in this building. And so, while we look forward to that, we still are here where we are, still separated in our houses and having to assemble electronically as we've been doing. But I think that there have been a number of blessings that have come as a result of the coronavirus and all of the different things that have come along with it. I understand that it has brought a lot of pain and grief to families and those who have been affected by it. But in the midst of all of that, there still have been, as I said, blessings. It's been a time for reflection. We have unbusied ourselves. We've been forced to do that. Because things have been canceled, we're not able to go out and involve ourselves in so much of the things that we were currently doing. We have a lot more time to sit and to reflect and to meditate on our lives. And that's a blessing. As we meditate and think about the situation, the dangers that present themselves with this virus and the fallout that comes from what's being done to try to combat the virus, we also see that there are some blessings there. I've heard a number of great lessons taught as a result of the virus and the things that have been done to try to combat it. One of the greatest lessons that I've seen from several people is in combating the virus, the greatest measure that seems to have been taken is the social distancing, keeping ourselves away from possible infection, contamination, anything that could possibly contaminate. There are a number of precautions taken to keep that from happening. And so the lesson for us, and hopefully we have all seen this, even if we maybe haven't heard someone specifically teach on this point, is there's something more deadly out there. And, of course, that's sin. And the same types of things that are done to keep from being infected by the virus, those same types of things can be done to keep ourselves from being infected again with sin. The idea of the distancing, keeping ourselves away from that which would infect us. You know, keep ourselves away from sin. Abhor that which is evil. Cling to that which is good, Paul would write in Romans chapter 12. And so if we abhor sin, if we keep away from sin, that will help us from contracting it. Of course, there's the PPE, the personal protective equipment that people can wear to help if they have to get close or if through no action of their own, the virus gets close to them. This personal protective equipment can help keep them safe. Well, as Christians, we have personal protective equipment that can keep us safe. And we find in Ephesians chapter 6, the armor of God that has been given to us, provided for us by God, so that as we fight in this world as Christians, we are protected from the wiles of the devil, those fiery darts that he would hurl at us to try to get us to succumb to the death that sin brings about. And so, you know, great lessons like that have been maybe brought to light, brought closer to mind because of what's going on, and we should see that as a blessing. We've talked about essential people, we've talked about essential things. And as we think about the things in this life that are essential, the people that are essential, it's hard not to think about the worth of a thing. A lot has been said about the sports industry and the fact that they're not needed right now. I'm sure there are a lot of people who are missing being able to watch their favorite sports or their favorite athletes or to be involved in the particular sport they might like to play. But it hadn't harmed anybody physically not to be able to watch or engage in those sports. And so the relative worth of those things, while a lot of money is given to that particular industry, you know, what value does it return for our money? We're entertained by it. Maybe we're made better physically by being engaged in those things. But what we found over the last couple months is there are other things that we can entertain ourselves with. There are other ways that we can find exercise and things that benefit the body. And so you think about the relative worth of the sports industry with the billions of dollars that go toward it every year. Well, maybe it's not really worth that much. And there are a lot of things that I have come to figure out, maybe not as worth as much as maybe I thought it was before. I'm doing okay without a lot of those things. And in several instances, the argument can be made doing better without some of those things. And so when you start thinking about the worth of a thing, I hope recognize that it is somewhat relative. Something that may be worth a lot to me may not be worth much to you. There are sentimental type things, maybe an heirloom that's been passed down from generation to generation. That might be worth a lot to me, whereas you might look at that and say, well, that's just a piece of junk. But that worth is relative. But there are some things that are worth a lot, and it's not really relative. It's not a matter of perspective or what it means to you. It's really worth a lot to anybody who would pursue it and obtain it. In Proverbs chapter 3, we find something here being given or offered that is worth more than gold, silver, precious stones. And it's spoken of throughout the Scripture, throughout the book of Proverbs, for sure. In Proverbs chapter 3, beginning in verse 13, we read, "Happy is the man who finds wisdom and the man who gains understanding. For her proceeds are better than the profits of silver, and her gain than fine gold. She is more precious than rubies, and all the things you may desire cannot compare with her." Now that's true. The wisdom, and here we are surely talking about the wisdom of God, that is worth more than gold or silver, more than rubies. And the man who would find her, we read in verse 13, is going to be happy. And that's true of anybody. Now, people may not recognize it. They might not want to admit to it. But the fact is, the wisdom from God is worth more than any physical thing here in this world. You turn over to chapter 4 of Proverbs, and in verse 5, when we understand the value of wisdom, and as here Solomon instructing his son, he doesn't just say, here's how valuable it is. In chapter 4 and verse 5, he says, "Get wisdom, get understanding. Do not forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth." So it's worth a lot. Go get it. And we are encouraged in this life to get a lot of things. And those things may be good in and of themselves, but nothing would compare to the wisdom that comes from God. So if we recognize the worth of it, let's go get it. Let's hold on to it. Over in chapter 16, Proverbs 16 and verse 16, "How much better to get wisdom than gold, and to get understanding is to be chosen rather than silver." Now, this point has been made by many people many times, but if there were a treasure, and I'm not talking about a buried treasure that nobody really is ever going to find. A treasure that's obtainable, it's there, there's a map, and we're talking about silver, gold, rubies, and that map is given to the general population. Could you imagine the chaos that would ensue as people rush to get that treasure? Well, God says, here it is. And yet people turn their backs, they show no interest, and they don't pursue the wisdom of God. They don't try to get that understanding because they don't recognize the worth of it. If you turn back to the book of Job, Job says a lot in his time of suffering that's questionable. He was suffering. He wanted to know why. He didn't understand why. And so he asked several questions, and he asked for several things that really are unwise, were unwise for him to ask. But in chapter 28, and this isn't the only place, but in chapter 28, he does say some things that we need to understand. He speaks the truth, and it's a lot like what we read over in the book of Proverbs. But we're going to read, picking up in Job chapter 28, beginning in verse 13, and we're going to read down through the rest of the chapter. Job 28, beginning in verse 13. Let's start from verse 12. But where can wisdom be found, and where is the place of understanding? Man does not know its value, nor is it found in the land of the living. The deep says, it is not in me, and the sea says, it's not with me. It cannot be purchased for gold, nor can silver be weighed for its price. It cannot be valued in the gold of Ophir, in precious onyx or sapphire. Neither gold nor crystal can equal it, nor can it be exchanged for jewelry or fine gold. No mention shall be made of coral or quartz, for the price of wisdom is above rubies. The topaz of Ethiopia cannot equal it, nor can it be valued in pure gold. From where, then, does wisdom come? And where is the place of understanding? It is hidden from the eyes of all living and concealed from the birds of the air. Destruction and death say, we have heard a report about it with our ears. God understands its ways, and he knows its place. For he looks to the ends of the earth and sees under the whole heavens to establish a weight for the wind and apportion the waters by measure. When he made a law for the rain and a path for the thunderbolt, then he saw wisdom and declared it. He prepared it. Indeed, he searched it out. And to man he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And depart from evil is understanding. And so when we think about the worth of wisdom, I hope we can appreciate the very thing that Job points out here. Though God has offered us his wisdom, and he's given us a portion of that that we can take hold of and live our lives by, there's so much that's still there with God that we'll never understand. We think about what's going on right now around the world. We're very limited in our understanding of what's going on and what's going to happen in the future. But God's not. God knows, and God is in control, and we need to trust that he is going to do right by those who follow him. And that doesn't necessarily mean that we're not going to face any ills here on this earth, but it does mean that we will be saved from wrath if we are faithful to him. But to trust in God and trust his wisdom, you know, to understand that the value of the wisdom from God is so far greater and cannot be purchased with money, well, that's a good start. But at the end, verse 28, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. To depart from evil, that is understanding. That's a good place to start. When we consider that God is the source of wisdom, we also know in James chapter 1 and verse 17 that God is the source of every good and perfect gift that comes down from heaven. And while there are good gifts that we have that are physical in nature, that are temporary in nature. God blesses us with things in this world that one day will be burned up, that will be spent up, will be used up. They can still be considered and we can still use them as blessings from God. But the eternal gifts that God gives, those are the only ones with any lasting value. You think about right now, again, in our current situation, a cure for the coronavirus, this particular strain of the coronavirus. What would that be worth? You know, it could be argued that it's priceless. But let's suppose that cure were found and the one there in the hospital who is dying, they're given the cure, they're made whole again. But can you see that they're going to leave the hospital and they could die in a car wreck on the way home? They could be cured of the coronavirus and have a heart attack the next week. You might cure one thing that ails us, but that doesn't take away the death that faces us all. And so a cure for the coronavirus, for cancer, for heart disease, for whatever it is that takes the lives of those we love and eventually will take our life, there's still something else that will come after that. And so while, yes, I would like to see a cure for the coronavirus, it still wouldn't be a lasting value, something with eternal benefits to us. So if we have limited resources, and we do, our time, our money, the energy that we have, that's all limited. So should we use those limited resources in pursuit of the things of this world that have no lasting value, or on things that are actually worth our time and money? So we want to look at Matthew chapter 13 and two very short parables that Jesus teaches here about the worth of the kingdom. In the title slide, What Is It Worth? We're talking about the kingdom of heaven. We're talking about entrance in and admittance to being a citizen of that kingdom. What is it really worth? Well, Jesus illustrates it in two parables found in Matthew chapter 13, verses 44 through 46. And first, he likens it to a treasure hidden in a field, which a man found and hid, and for joy over it, he goes and sells all that he has and buys that field. And again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant seeking beautiful pearls, who, when he had found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it. So in those two short parables, Jesus teaches us something about the worth of the kingdom. You see, both of these men found something that they recognized right off was very precious, was worth a lot. In fact, we're told that both of them went and sold all that they had to purchase the thing that they had found. They didn't, and I recognize these are two very short parables. We're not given a lot of the details. But the way it's worded, we don't get any idea or sense that either of these men went to the owners and tried to get a bargain, tried to somehow, you know, take possession of something that was worth so much without giving very much in return for it. What we find is they immediately both go and sell all that they have to acquire what they recognized was of more value than anything that they currently possessed. And that's the way we should view the kingdom of heaven. Whatever we have in this life, whatever we've been blessed with, whatever we've acquired here in this world, it does not begin to compare with what the kingdom of heaven is worth and our citizenship in that kingdom. I want to talk for just a few minutes about what we find in the kingdom. You know, To be in the kingdom of heaven means that we have access to some things that are not available anywhere else. When you think about what's going on right now, and you can see there, hopefully on the screen, or if you can't see the screen, there are a number of things listed there that the world right now would love to have. To have love, to have comfort, peace, rest, and help. Those, who wouldn't want those things? But what we're going to see is those things are only available to those who are citizens of, those who are a part of the kingdom of heaven. In Romans chapter 5, a passage that we're, I think, very familiar with, Paul speaks of the great love that God has for us. Verse 8 is probably one of the more memorable verses from the book of Romans. Romans chapter 5, verse 8, "But God demonstrates His own love toward us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us." Now, that could be, in a way, applied to everybody in this world. Christ died for the world. He gave Himself that all would have the opportunity to come and have their sins forgiven by the precious blood of Christ. And so, yes, we see God's love demonstrated in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. But sometimes what we don't realize that Paul, the point Paul is making here to those saints in Rome, is that if God demonstrated such love while we were still sinners, notice he says in verse 9, "Much more then, having now been justified by His blood, we shall be saved from wrath through Him. For if when we were enemies, we were reconciled to God through the death of His Son, much more, having been reconciled, we shall be saved by His life. And not only that, but we also rejoice in God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom we have now received the reconciliation." If, when we consider the love that's a part of the kingdom of heaven, that's had in the kingdom, it is, if you can imagine it, greater than the love that was shown to us while we were still sinners and when Christ gave His life for us. Now, that's not a love that you'll find anywhere in this world. That's not a love that you're going to find in any person in this world. But that is the love that we'll find from our Father and from our Lord Jesus Christ in the kingdom of heaven. In 1 John chapter 3 and verse 1, John says, "Behold what manner of love God has bestowed on us in that He has taken us in as His family. We now can be called the children of God because of His love." And again, that's only for those who are in the kingdom. If we're in the kingdom, we are those children of God. We have access to God as our Father who can provide for our needs and give us all that we need to make it through this world in Him. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. John chapter 13, I think, is a great verse to think about when we think about the love that comes from God, from Christ, found in that kingdom. You know, there are people who will love us in the world, but sometimes that love comes to an end. Sometimes, for whatever reason, people will stop loving us. They'll stop showing that love for us, especially if we do something to them that's hurtful. In John chapter 13, Jesus, this is the night before He is to be betrayed. This is the night before He's to be forsaken by all of His disciples. This is the night before He is to be that Passover lamb who's going to be slain on the cross. I want you to notice what it says there in verse 1. "Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that His hour had come, that He should depart from this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. In spite of everything and all the failures of those who were close to him, he didn't fail them. He loved them to the end. And in the kingdom of heaven, we're not going to be perfect. We're not going to live perfect lives. That's what we should be striving for. But the fact is, we're at times going to be like the apostles, and we're going to have that little faith that causes us to stumble. But God will love us to the end. Jesus will see us through, so long as we remain faithful to him and look to him for guidance. In the kingdom, there's comfort. In Luke chapter 16, we read about two men. One man who found comfort in this world, and one man who found comfort in the life to come. The rich man and Lazarus. The rich man had everything he needed in this world. He lived a very comfortable life until his life on this earth ended. Lazarus, on the other hand, lived a dreadful life. He was in misery. He was in torments while he was here on this earth. But notice what's said in Luke chapter 16, when life here was over. In verse 22, "So it was, the beggar died and was carried by the angels to Abraham's bosom." And then if you drop down to verse 25, "But Abraham said, 'Son, remember that in your lifetime you received your good things, and likewise Lazarus evil things, but now he is comforted and you are tormented.'" And the difference is, the comfort that the rich man had in this life was short-lived. It was temporary. It came to an end. The comfort that Lazarus received when this life was over was eternal. And that's the type of comfort we find in God. In 2 Corinthians chapter 1, the entire chapter and really the entire book focuses on the comfort that comes from God, the God of all comfort. But in some of the first few verses there in the book, in 2 Corinthians chapter 1, beginning in verse 3, Paul writes, "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and God of all comfort, who comforts us in our tribulation, that we may be able to comfort those who are in any trouble with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God. For as the sufferings of Christ abound in us, so our consolation also abounds through Christ." The first example we look at with Lazarus, we see the comfort that comes after this life. But Paul here speaks of a comfort that can be had while in this life. In the kingdom of heaven, we can be comforted, even in the midst of tribulation and trial, as Paul writes about here. And I think the biggest part of that comfort is found knowing that we serve that God who loves us and who will love us always, knowing that whatever happens in this life, it will be as nothing compared to the glory that awaits us. And so we can take comfort in whatever situation we're in because of the hope we have that is provided by God through the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Peace. You know, one of the things that I've seen to come about as a result of the coronavirus and so much that's surrounding it is a lot of division. I mean, there was already enough division in this world, but it seems like at a time when maybe this pandemic would bring people together, it seems like it's just driving many further apart. And as long as we live in this world, we're going to find that there will never be any true lasting peace. It seems that as you look back through history, there are cycles, there are periods of peace in the world, but that peace is always interrupted by war. And as we look to the kingdom of heaven, we find that there's a peace there that will not be interrupted. in Luke chapter 7 and 8, verse 50 of chapter 7, verse 48 of chapter 8, Jesus, in speaking to one who has been in sin, who's had sin, he sends them on their way, and he says, go in peace. And he also speaks of their sins being forgiven, and those two things go hand in hand. He could heal someone of a physical ailment and tell them to go, but if their sin remains with them, they really cannot go in peace. We were talking last night at home as we were reading through Exodus 19 and 20 about the word shalom in the Hebrew, which means peace. But it also carries with it the idea of being made whole. If you look at the word up in the Hebrew, you'll see that definition of whole is used. And I think that really applies here. As Jesus makes the person physically whole, he forgives their sins and makes them spiritually whole, restores that relationship between them and their Father, between them and Him as their Lord. But that peace is only found in the kingdom of heaven. Philippians chapter 4 and verse 7, as Paul talks about the peace that surpasses all understanding that will guard our hearts. When we have that peace and understanding, knowing that we are whole, we're no longer broken by sin, we've been made whole by the blood of Christ, we have peace with our Father, you know, that does guard our heart. And nothing can move us so long as we have that understanding and we remain faithful to our God. I think about Luke chapter 14, where Jesus talks about counting the cost. And in that discussion, he wants his disciples to know that there is a cost associated with following him. If you're going to be my disciple, you've got to recognize you're going to have to give up everything. There has to be a willingness to forsake all that you have if you're going to be my disciple. And that's a high cost, but I tell you, it's worth it. And that's what we're hopefully seeing this morning. So the first part of this is in Luke 14, verses 25 through 33. The first part of this is just really discussing that idea. You know, are you willing to pay what it costs? And so we might ask ourselves, can we afford it? Can we afford to be a disciple of Christ? Because it will come, that following, at a high cost. But the last thing he speaks to, I think there in verses 31 and 32, is can you afford not to? Can you afford not to be my disciple? He speaks of a king who's going to make war against another king who doesn't first sit down and figure, am I going to be able with my 10,000 to meet him who comes against me with 20,000? And the answer to that is generally obvious. No, I can't stand against him. And so while he's a great way off, we've sinned and asked conditions of peace. Well, when we recognize that we've sinned against God and one day we're going to have to face him, we're not going to be able to stand. And so while it may cost me everything to become a disciple of Christ, I can't afford not to do that. Because when the Lord comes, I'm not going to be able to meet him. So the only thing I can do is send and ask those conditions of peace. But they've been given. And God is willing to make peace with us. And he's even provided the payment necessary to make us whole. And that is the blood of his Son, the death of his Son on the cross. He was willing to give that in order to provide peace. And so to have that peace that comes in the kingdom of God is such a wonderful, great blessing that will guard our hearts. To have the rest. You know, there are some people who are getting a little bit of rest right now. They're not maybe able to go to work as they normally have, and so they're able to rest and relax a little bit. But that's not true rest. It's not a lasting rest. It's not the rest that Jesus speaks of in Matthew 11, verses 28 and 29, when he talks about his yoke being easy, his burden is light. If we're willing to come to him and accept that yoke and that burden, he will give us rest. In Hebrews chapter 4, we read about the rest that God had promised to those of Israel, but they did not obtain that rest because of unbelief. But he tells us in verse 9 that there remains a rest for the children of God. In Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 9, there remains therefore a rest for the people of God. For he who has entered his rest has himself also ceased from his works as God did from his. Let us therefore be diligent to enter that rest, lest anyone fall according to the same example of disobedience. So the rest is there and it's there for us to enter, but we've got to be diligent. That rest is eternal, but it's going to take work to obtain it. And as we think about obtaining that which God has provided for us, we may think, well, that love, that comfort, the peace, the rest, you know, that all sounds really good, but look, I'm only human. I'm subject to sin. I'm subject to failure. In fact, not only am I subject to it, but I'm prone to do that. How will I ever live up to the standard? How will I ever serve God in the way He would have me to in order to obtain all of these wonderful blessings? Well, still there in Hebrews chapter 4, we find the answer to that. In verse 14, after talking about entering the rest and looking at those who didn't enter, we might think, well, how are we any better than they? How are we going to be able to do what they didn't do? Verse 14 says, seeing that we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast our confession. For we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but was in all points tempted as we are, yet without sin. Let us therefore come boldly to the throne of grace that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. Now, don't misunderstand what the Hebrew writer here is saying. He's not saying live your life as you want to, because we've got Jesus and Jesus understands what we're going through. And so if you sin, that's not really that big of a deal. You just come before the throne of grace and you find that help that you need. That's not what he's saying. Notice what he says at the end of verse 15. Yes, he was tempted in all points as we are, yet without sin. And what that shows us is not just that he was able then to be that perfect sacrifice. What he shows us is it is possible to live in this life as a human, as one who's created in the image of God. It's possible to live here and not sin. Now, will we do it perfectly as Christ did? No, we won't. We haven't and we won't. But as we look to Christ for help, He knows what we're going through. When we read in Hebrews, 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13, God is not going to allow us to be tempted beyond what we're able to bear. You know, there's no temptation that's going to affect us that doesn't affect everybody. Christ knows that. We might look at that passage and say, well, yeah, but you just don't know. How many times have we said, or how many times have somebody said to us when we are talking about a situation, and somebody said, well, you just don't know what I'm going through. You don't know what it's like. Maybe I don't, but Jesus does, and God does. And God is able to deliver and provide that way of escape and to give us help so that not we can just continue in our sin and everything's going to be okay on the other side, but so that we can come out of sin and follow faithfully His Son, Jesus Christ, who will lead us to that eternal rest. And so we have that help. And as Paul speaks about in Acts chapter 26 and verse 22, as he talks about his life up to the point that he finds himself as a prisoner standing, giving his defense, you know, there have been a lot of people let Paul down throughout his life, including himself. But he says, the Lord has helped me. Paul had overcome a lot of things, and he had remained faithful. And he was able to do that, not because he had such a strong fortitude, Not because he was born a stubborn individual, and you know, Paul was, he was stubborn in his persecution, but once he became a Christian, he let that stubborn attitude, and that wasn't why he was able to do it. He was able to do it because God helped him. And God will help us. But again, these are blessings that come as a result of being a part of the kingdom. So going back to our question, what is it worth? What is being a citizen of the kingdom worth? Well, here are just some of the benefits that await those who will become citizens, who will make that entrance into the kingdom, that entrance that's provided by the blood of Christ. So the first question is pretty easy to answer. What is it worth? Well, God shows us through His Word again and again what it's worth. But we have to come back to this question. What is it worth to you? If we started out talking about worth is sometimes relative and something that may be very valuable, a person in this world looking at it, not recognizing its value, may not be willing to do much to obtain something. And there are a lot of people who will miss out on the blessings of heaven because they just don't recognize what it truly is worth. And the question this morning is, do you? We offer the invitation now. We, as we've said throughout the past several weeks, we stand ready, even though we're not physically gathered in the same place, we do stand ready to help you. Especially any who recognize the need to become a Christian, to have their sins washed away in the waters of baptism. We could take care of that today just as quickly as you could get to the building or any other body of water where we might baptize you. We can take care of that right now. If you have other needs, again, just let us know what they are, and we'll do our very best to help you. And we can be assured, as we've seen this morning, that God will, He's willing. He's done everything to make it possible, but it's up to us to reach out and take hold of the hand that He has extended to us. If there's any way that we can help you with anything, just think about that while we sing this song of invitation.